Okay, for today, J. Exodus Hooper, they, them, is a multifaceted individual who has dedicated over 8 years to the ethical culture and congregational humanist movements. They embody the role of arts and cultural community educator, curator, clergy, and scholar. Dr. Hooper's activism intertwines with aesthetics, ethics, and community-based performance. They identify as a neo-mannerist, sensorial and or in-touch element with the humanist spectrum, aiming to expand our understanding beyond conventional boundaries, logic, but love as a way of being. Their work delves into the margins, encouraging us to engage with wonder, transcending typical humanist paradigms and embracing the complexities of self and the world. Dr. Hooper.
Thank you. All right. I feel like it's been really good to be here. Thank you. I'm actually learning Minnesota. Let me grab this and charge this up a bit. Learning Minnesota, so this is the first time I'm out here to Winona, did I say that correctly? Okay, and Minneapolis has kind of become a third home for me. I'm from the East Coast, so anything mid-Atlantic, New York to Baltimore, I'm kind of very familiar with. But it is an honor to be here. It was lovely to hear a lot of the things that you shared. I bring you greetings from First Unitarian Society as their long life learning minister, as well as their community minister for humanist community minister, and also from Ethical Culture located in New York City. Is that better? Oh, that is off now? All right, there we go. Is that a lot better? Okay, cool. Let me just share with you in your hearing, because I'm sure that many of you are familiar with the fifth principle, and you've talked about it a few times. I'm going to offer a reflection and more so an examination. I'm not going to kind of maybe highlight everything in it, but the good thing is that y'all will have other speakers to expand on it. But it is the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. So I read this a few times because I'm very fascinated for, and I said, let me just give us a moment. If I may ask you this question, I would like for you to turn to someone for no more than like 3 minutes, if you will. And the question is, when were you introduced to a democratic process? When were you introduced to a democratic process, and how did it make you feel? If you can just turn to someone around you, maybe 3 people, 4 people, love your neighbor for a few minutes. As you begin to bring yourself back, words like inclusion. I heard a process. No disrespect, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for doing it. Makes it a lot easier when you're not echoing. I heard this word like inclusion. I heard folks talking about, you know, when they were introduced, how they felt heard. I heard words like seen. And so I'm wondering if you don't mind, I left you a card underneath your on your seat with a pencil. I mean a pen. Just write down three key things that came up for you in that discussion, really fast. I'm gonna continue to talk while y'all do that. So hopefully you don't mind multitasking. Welcome to the world of me being neurospicy. I'm a little ADHD, I can do multiple things. That's why it's called multifaceted. Multifaceted scholar. But as you're listing these values, I'm going to introduce in your hearing brief kind of reality within the work of Paul Tillich. Paul Tillich was a German-American theologian, Christian existentialist philosopher, which I thought would be very helpful at this point. He has a book, and if you've never read it, it's called The Theology of Peace. But he's inspired specifically after, with this book, after he actually creates a cohort, if you will, a council that he begins to create in 1944. And it's together with other theologians like Reinhold Niebuhr and so on and so forth, who they actually begin to start this council. And this council is to introduce a democratic process. And this democratic process happens basically post-war political reconstruction in Germany. The goal of this, check this, this is what Tillich and the others want. The post-war political reconstruction of a democratic Germany was the following. Measuring the purging of German educational institutions, such as libraries, theaters, museums, and racist Nazi teaching. The other, he offers, he says, together with a plan to reorganize German education within a democratic channel. And finally, a program of political unity with all anti-Nazi forces in Germany that could eventually adhere. I'll read that last one again because I found that to be very interesting. The final program of this council was to unify with all anti-Nazi forces in Germany that they could eventually adhere. Tillich and these other philosophers and theologians in Germany are creating a council that is pushing on a democratic process, and the democratic process involves three things. I read them in detail, but if I was to sum them up, he's interested particularly in the ideology of what has happened in Germany. So he's particularly pushing against the ideology, right, of the Nazi forces. He's particularly going after the institutions in Germany. And to unify all anti-Nazi forces to eventually adhere, he focuses on the cultural image. What is Germany to become? What is Germany to become? Now, this is just one section in history. You can probably read more about it. And I will give you that as a fragment to think about. The image, the institution, the ideology. I point to this work because this work is also very layered in the work of also people like William Stringfellow, who was a lay leader and lawyer. He's very unique. He doesn't have a profound amount of work, but when you read his stuff, he does outline this fabric of image, ideology, an institution. And he calls them the principalities of power. And these principalities of power also affect, as we can see, the democratic process. If I may be cultural for a minute, I'll speed it up and, as my grandmother would say, get to the point. I like to think of Dr. Howard Thurman when I hear these things, the democratic process, because I was not introduced to a democratic process until I actually got into my first master's program. That was in 2010. You're like, well, democracy, you should know what it feels like. You should. Not a home where you have to live in a framework of protection, where everything is told to you and how to survive. Democracy is such a unique thing. If I was to list my three points of democracy as learning them, I would say that my democracy needs to be attached to liberation. My democracy needs to be attached to liberation. And here's why. Because I grew up in an African-American home in a predominantly white neighborhood. And I also attended a black church all the way on the other side of town. Literally, my Sundays were the most segregated hour. So, church-wise, being that my parents were very religious and often would take me to congregate, we never saw a democratic process. It wasn't normal, if you will, culturally, because people moved by, quote, the spirit. Whatever the spirit wanted, the spirit did. And whoever had the spirit, you focus on that one individual. Now, this is, of course, just cultural for me, and I never experienced it. It wasn't until I got into a classroom, and a professor said, well, we want to have everybody's voice involved. And I looked and said, oh, this is going to take a long time. They started debriefing, they started taking the votes, and I'm like, okay. And then they wanted to vote on something else. And then they would discuss what they voted on, and then vote again. And then vote again. And I'm sure most of you know this feeling, because we vote till we can't vote anymore. And we talk it out till we can't talk it out anymore. And if we all wanted to try to change the light bulb in here, I guarantee you it'd be a whole democratic process. Who's gonna change it? How many people we're gonna need? And this to vote, right? But that doesn't always happen for other folk like myself who didn't experience that. It becomes very frustrating. It becomes a moment where I grew up, like I said, from a space of survival. So what does that mean? Of course, I lived in maybe an affluent neighborhood, but my parents worked three jobs where my neighbors did not. I had a tutor because my parents were not home. So, as I got to high school, and I think about my social demographic, just to paint a picture for you, I knew that any decision I needed to make was going to be based off of survival. Democracy does not always think about survival. It doesn't think about urgency. People, particularly queer folk, Black queer folk, Black trans folk, they do not actually have the same longevity in time as others. So I actually introduce you to a critique to democracy and how fast you move. Where is your urgency regarding those who probably know democracy only from the viewpoint of make sure you're home before it's too dark? You're a young Black man, you need to make sure you're home before it's too dark. Don't drive that Cadillac that your grandfather gave you, because they will pull you over in the suburbs. Survival. I love my grandfather's Cadillac, but at an age where hip hop was being highly critiqued, and anybody who saw a Cadillac and saw somebody who was African-American, it was questionable in a white neighborhood. I was often questioned if I was driving it. Where was I going? Where did I live? And I could not live where I lived. especially if I only had myself and my mom with me? It was very questionable. So how do I do this thing? I introduced to you the work of Howard Thurman. Howard Thurman, the mentor of Dr. King, who said, I want to be me without making it uncomfortable for you to be you. I want to be me without making it uncomfortable for you to be you. This has become a ministerial call for me. This is why when I visited this, I wanted to challenge myself, because you told me I could talk about any principle I wanted to, but I said, let me challenge myself here. And it's because I had to think about the work that I had been producing for quite some time around what is the image of democracy that I've seen. And most of the time, especially in congregational lives that I've been in, I never see anyone who looks like me. I never see anyone cut from the same cloth. And great, it's wonderful to call me Dr. Hooper, but at the end of the day, I'm the first in my family to go to college, and I got a doctoral of ministry only to find out, because I didn't have a terminal degree, which I didn't even know what the heck that was. Somebody said, you need to go back to school to get a terminal in order to, I said, oh, this is a lot. I played a very interesting game of life, trying to survive and being, quote, successful on what Dr. Anthony Penn would call white social definition. And so for me, I critique democracy based off of its white social definition. I had the wonderful experience of reading UU ministers from one of the fifth principle projects had received an email. This point is the following. She says, she got this email only to realize that as she'd been working on this project, that she said the key word here to the project was that it was the principle, the fifth principle, was a grassroots ideal. The grassroots, she first describes it as the grassroots. And I said, And she critiques it in the following way, where it says, the fifth principle is an organic grassroots initiative to gather into community of Unitarian Universalists who want the right of consciousness and renewed democratic process. She breaks it down further only to find out that she had been listening to people, and she said she listened to minorities in this space. She listened to those who assume about their pronouns. And she realized that democracy wasn't in every vote. Why? I'm glad you asked. Because not everyone was from the same location. Cultural, socially, age, you name it. The demographics, if you name it, some people were just not exposed to it. I often say, I like the spaces that I'm in, but there's a level of sophistication that even my grandmother can't sit in this kind of space, because she wouldn't even know what the heck I'm talking about. No, give or take, yeah, she's 80-something years old. Who are in these spaces? Who are in our congregations? Who are occupying democratic processes? Who has the language? But not only that, who has the time? Regarding urgency and agency, when we do see protests, yes, for black folk, queer folk, trans folk, indigenous folk, folks with disabilities, and so on and so forth. Where does democracy step in with urgency? She points out in this writing, which I will be definitely sending to you for the website so y'all can share. I thought it was just very powerful here. How she says she had to revisit the democratic process of her congregation. And she realized in stating, here it is, that regardless of what she claimed to do for this project around democracy and the revitalization of the congregation, the fifth principle she discovered was to preserve white supremacy culture. She's a white woman, white UU minister. The argument was that it was preserving white supremacy culture, all while arguing at the same time the congregation was arguing that white supremacy culture isn't real. I love being in a room with intellects. It's quite an experience. This is one of the most dangerous articles, she says, in our faith movement. That thing crushed me. Because I was like, my first experience having a democratic process, I had to remember how I felt. And honestly, most of my colleagues were white. Most of them didn't have the experience I had. So everything we took a vote on, technically, was opposite from my experience. And even when I'm on the board of Ethical Culture, which is a predominantly white religious institution as well, I realize that my experience, my age, even though kind of most people don't believe, but yes, I'm 40, it's, you don't have enough experience. You're not this. And so it's this idea of democratic, or what I have called also, progressive pedigree. Only people with a certain kind of pedigree know how to use the democratic process to their ability. And that is where we see the trouble, if you will, with the democratic process in our congregations. So why did I come today? I didn't come here to talk about white supremacy. I didn't come here to actually tell you how to run your space. I've been deeply welcomed. But I would offer us this insight, that we have to consider the images that are in the room. As one who is an artist and who enjoys aesthetics, it is all about what democracy looks like. And so, if you look at your list that you just made, if you look at the list that you just made for yourself regarding democracy, I wonder for yourself, if I may, who's in relationship with the democracy you imagine? Most of the time, democracy and democratic processes are in service to, not necessarily in relationship with, which is oftentimes my critique in general to most of our congregational spaces. We love to be in service to, but we struggle oftentimes being in relationship with. We will do a really good job using literature as a formation of liberation. We will use education as a formation of emancipation, and we will do our best to read our way out of racism if we are not careful. But we never end up having a relationship. We will talk about prison systems and how to adjust them, but we do not have possibly sometimes prisoners in our own family that we write letters to. We will talk a lot of stuff about people who are Trump supporters or conservatives, and we will downplay them. And some of them we will not even go to dinner with, and they are part of our family. We will have racists at our tables, and we do not know how to call them in. And something about democracy, if we are not careful, will do this very thing. It will silence us. And in many cases, over my first democratic process of learning how to vote, put my voice out there and constantly voting and sometimes never getting anything back, and sometimes over in the spaces that I've constantly occupied, even as a Black clergy leader here in this movement, I realize that at the same time, the challenge and the constant pushing and the constant combating comes with the fact that there is no urgency regarding certain social classes and demographics. So I offer you this. You're probably asking, well, what do we do? Is it garbage? It's not garbage. I promise you it's not. I'm an African-based scholar. One of my favorite words is Ubuntu. How many of you have heard, has anybody ever heard that word? Okay, great. Ubuntu means I am because we are. I offer this as a re-indigenization to the democratic process. I'm not gonna leave you without a hope. That would be un-Pentecostal of me, as my grandmother would say. There's hope for democracy. What would it look like if you actually could gather that I am because we are? I can say it, but I want you to practice just for a minute. Say that to yourself, and then think about yourself in this room. I am because we are. Everybody, let's go. I am because we are. Let's try that again. I am because we are. Say it without me.
I am because we are.
If we feel it for a moment, and for my professors in the room, and some of my teachers in the room that I've heard, we have the wonderful opportunity to take this framework for a minute and impart it as a me-search. So when I did my dissertation, I wrote very clearly and made it very clear. I'm not doing research only, I am doing me-search. And as I do research, what happens is I end up doing a reflective process, a revisionary process, and a responsive process that creates research. But research is not only for the benefit of my me-search, it is for the benefit of the collective, because I am because we are, so therefore I have we. Search. As a scholar who came out of school, did all of the jumping and all of the things that I needed to do, I'll be honest, it was the best interpersonal democratic process I needed to do. I needed to locate myself within my own experience to then offer an authentic voice in hopes that others could lean into a cloth that is not that they're not familiar with. Arguably, for those in the room, I would say that healthy research, can speak to the ivory tower as well to the grassroots. But the grassroots You gotta remember, as my grandmother would say, where you came from. Where did you come from? And not only that, what will you become? I am nothing without y'all. I'm not gonna lie. I accepted the challenge because I wanted to do research and research while doing this work. Because I wanted a healthy work that said I need to do democracy in an act of love. So when I see democracy, I see that we can also do the same thing in our spaces, because we do have the demographics that oftentimes in UU congregations are either very lucrative or sometimes economically sound, or if not that, educationally sound, and sometimes not only speaking King's English, but Imperial English, and sometimes we cannot even go that far. So I invite you into the process of democracy, because Theodore Parker, as it's put on the website, says democracy means I am as good as you are. But I'll be honest, I didn't always feel good. I didn't always feel like I fit in. And it didn't help if somebody was going to tell me that I didn't have the pedigree to fit in. So I had to go back. So who is at our table is the question. How did democracy make you feel is the other. Who is at the table and how did democracy make you feel? When I look at this and I offer you the idea of Ubuntu, it is important to have a democratic process because it offers us collective wealth, not just a collective vote. My point here is saying, in the words of William Stafford, if you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world. And following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. For there is many a small betrayal in the mind. There are many a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug that lets the fragile sequence break. And as elephants parade, holding each elephant's tail, if one wonders, the circus won't find its way to the park. And I call it cruel, and maybe the root of all cruelty, to know what occurs in our processes, but not recognize the fact. So I appeal to a voice, something shadowy, in all who talk. We could all fool each other, but we should consider, lest our mutual lives get lost in the dark. The signals we give, yes or no, or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep. I don't want to lose anybody in the process of my democratic work in a congregation. I want to see you at my table. I want to see people not only who look like me, but who also challenge me. I want to change my point of view and make sure that I decolonize my mind enough to also show up in authentic ways. Once again, as Howard Thurman said, where I want to be me without making it uncomfortable for you to be you. May your democracy be attached to liberation.